Welcome to I'm a Bodybuilder Magazine.
All right, welcome to episode one of I'm a Bodybuilder Magazine's podcast. I'm your host, Myron Milkey. Well, I'm excited about this podcast, and I've got some big plans for it in the months ahead. So if you're a fitness nut or a hardcore bodybuilder, sit back and enjoy the show. Here we go. First up is our news section. As I'm reading newspapers or going through news websites, I come across interesting articles that pertain to the fitness and bodybuilding industry, and I'm going to be sharing some of those articles with you as I come upon them. The first one that caught my eye was a new study that was just completed. It was a study on low-carb diets and found out the low-carb diet was best for weight and cholesterol control. The Atkins diet may have proved itself after all. A low-carb diet and a Mediterranean-style regimen helped people lose more weight than a traditional low-fat diet in one of the longest and largest studies to compare the dueling weight loss techniques. One of the biggest surprises from this study was that the low-carb diet improved cholesterol more than the other two, and some critics had predicted just the opposite. However, all three approaches, the low-carb diet, a low-fat diet, and a so-called Mediterranean diet, that'd be the South Beach diet for everyone involved here, all of those achieved weight loss and improved cholesterol. The research was done in a controlled environment, an isolated nuclear research facility in Israel. The 322 participants got their main meal of the day, lunch, at a central cafeteria. And as I'm reading this, the study is remarkable not only because it lasted 2 years, much longer than most, but also because of the huge proportion of people who stuck with the diets, 85%. That's amazing in a study. That doesn't happen very often at all. That's usually why when some studies are performed, they use lab rats, because they can monitor quite effectively what a rat eats. They can put food in front of them and they will eat it. Whereas humans, we're picky. We don't like this. We don't like that. We don't want to eat that. We might go good for a while, then we're going to cheat. So it's a little bit difficult sometimes for these studies to actually be conducted, but they had an actual 85% of people that were actually willing to follow this. So I think that's incredible in itself. So the average weight loss for those in the low-carb group was 10.3 pounds after 2 years, and those in the Mediterranean diet lost 10 pounds, so that's nearly equal, and those on the low-fat regimen dropped 6.5 pounds. Well, that kind of flies in the face of what we were taught by textbooks and pretty much the big fads of the 80s was eat a low-fat diet and everyone's going to lose weight. The food pyramid, eat high carbohydrates. But I think that something is a little haywire with that. If you look at our society, we seem to be getting fatter and fatter as the decades go by. So what I find interesting is that this study was just recently performed. And bodybuilders have known this for decades, and it's finally catching on to the general public, and they're finally starting to do some research on it. Any of the old school bodybuilders of the 1950s and 60s, when they tried to gain more definition for competition, they increased their protein and they cut back their starches and their carbohydrates. Sometimes their fat contents even stayed high. They ate a lot of beef. They ate a lot of red meat. And some of them even drank milk, which isn't great for cutting up because there is a lot of carbs and fat in addition to protein in it. So bodybuilders have been onto something for years, and the general public is finally starting to catch up with that. So hats off to my fellow bodybuilders out there who have been helping people lose weight for quite some time, and now they've really started to proven, it's really started to be proven that we know what we're talking about. Well, since we are talking about fat loss and diet, low-carb diets and so forth, this kind of segues right into my next subject that I wanted to cover. I'll be having a question and answer time that I will be answering questions that I've received email. Over the years, I've written many articles for publications. The one that I write for mostly is bodybuilding.com. And there was one article that I wrote several years ago. the 8-week summer slim down. That has been my most popular article that I've written for them. I've received dozens of email questions over the years, and quite recently, since I brought out part two, I've been flooded with email questions, and I try to answer every one of those. And for those of you who were too shy to email me, maybe you've had the same question. So I'm going to take some of those questions from the emails and give you some answers for those. Okay, question number one. I do not like cream of rice. Can I substitute that with low-fat string cheese? Well, as I've found out, that's pretty common. Many people do not like cream of rice. I don't know if they don't like the taste of it, they don't like the texture, it seems kind of mushy. Not really certain. I don't mind it myself. But many people have asked for a substitute for that. So I wouldn't substitute low-fat string cheese, because the place where I had that in the meal plan, I really wanted a fast-burning carbohydrate in its place. But that being said, if you like oatmeal, the good oatmeal, not the little packets that have all the sugar in it, they only have 10 grams of sugar, granted, but I would prefer that you would eat the regular oatmeal. It takes a little bit longer to cook, not necessarily the quick oats, but like the old-fashioned rolled oats. Ideally, the best thing to eat would be the steel-cut oats, but I'm not patient enough to cook those very often, because it takes me like 30 to 45 minutes to cook those in a kettle, and I am a microwave guy, so I like to make my oatmeal in the microwave. It takes like 5 or 6 minutes, and I have oatmeal. So instead of string cheese, which is more of a protein, I would substitute it with oatmeal or a malt oatmeal or a cream of wheat. If you can stomach the cream of wheat, maybe not if you don't like cream of rice, but that is something that you could substitute for that either way. And also, speaking of substitutions, probably the number one question that I've got, and I did mention it in part two of my article of the 8-week summer slim down, is what can I substitute for cottage cheese? And I really had no idea there were that many people out there that didn't like cottage cheese, but as I'm finding out, there are lots of you out there. You've either never tried it, or if you have, you can't stand the texture in your mouth, you don't like the taste, you think it's gross, and it's overall, you just say, yuck, I'm not going to eat it. Well, that's fine. You don't have to eat it if you don't like it. So what I recommend for substituting would be a low-fat, sugar-free, or non-fat, sugar-free yogurt. That'll take the place of it. It's a good enough substitute. You can always have grilled chunk chicken in place of any of the proteins, but sometimes you can only eat so much chicken. So if you don't like the cottage cheese, eat some yogurt instead, and you'll be fine with that. Here's another question. I drink about a half a cup of coffee in the morning. Can I still keep that, or do I have to cut it? No, you don't have to cut your coffee in the morning. You can drink a cup of coffee in the morning. The caffeine in it actually will help usually give you a little bit more of a boost, give you a little bit of energy, and keep you going. The thing that you need to watch out is if you drink coffee with cream and sugar in it. If you put a quarter cup of half and half in it, along with a few tablespoons of sugar, that's going to defeat the purpose, and no, then you can't have that. But if you're drinking only a half a cup of coffee in the morning, maybe with a little bit of non-fat milk for your creamer, and a packet of Splenda or Equal or an artificial sweetener of some sort, that is not going to affect anything, and it probably help you out, extra caffeine. A lot of the fat burner supplements that are out there, one of their main ingredients is caffeine, and it helps give you a little bit of boost, helps keep you going, can help you exercise a little bit longer. So don't worry about having a cup of hot Joe in the morning. It's perfectly fine. Here's another question. I really enjoy croutons on my salads or anything crunchy. Do you have any healthier options? I use multigrain croutons, but I would be interested in trying a different option. Well, croutons in themselves are not that bad if you get like the low fat ones or multigrain. But if you're actually trying to follow this 8-week summer slim down, if you're trying to actually target losing body fat, the croutons are only going to add extra calories, extra carbohydrates, which we're trying not to add anything. We're trying not to have any hidden carbs. We're trying to have a lot of basic foods, a lot of vegetables. I recommend eating a lot of vegetables, as you've seen in the plan, a lot of salads, a lot of green vegetables. The croutons are like adding another extra slice of bread. You don't really need the extra carbohydrates. It will be detrimental to the plan. So I would say no, at this point, do not have the croutons. But when you have finished the 8-week plan, and the 8-week summer slim down is only a fat loss plan, and then part two, if you'll read that, I highly recommend you go on a maintenance program and you stay where you're at for a while, or you stay with, if you're content with the what you have lost, you stay there. You can add a few croutons now and then. That's not going to hurt, but you want to be aware that, you know, you just don't want to follow a diet plan, lose some weight, and then go back to your old eating habits and gain all the weight back. That's not what you want to do. But eating a few croutons on a maintenance program probably isn't going to hurt you. But don't do it when you're actually trying to lose the body fat. Concludes our question answer time. Our next topic is keeping balance in your exercise plan. It's normal to have a preference for one type of exercise over another. For example, an ex-football linebacker might have a tendency to spend much of his time in the weight room. Runners will spend time performing cardio exercise. No matter what your tendencies might be, it's important to include the three different types of exercise into your workout strategy. Exercise can be divided into three categories. The first is cardiovascular exercise. It's called cardio these days. 20 years ago, everyone called it aerobic exercise. Call it whatever you want. However, we're going to call it cardio for our segment right now. Cardio exercise is good for your heart and lungs. Normally, it's recommended to spend about 30 minutes at a time performing and to do it 3 to 4 sessions of it per week. Now, resistance training, weightlifting, is the second category of exercise. This type of exercise is primarily responsible for developing strength in your muscles. Strong muscles are toned muscles. Resistance training is very beneficial in developing toned, sleek-looking muscles. Weightlifting can be performed 3 or more days per week for 30 to 45 minutes at a time. Flexibility is the third category. This exercise involves stretching, which helps to increase range of motion in various body parts and helps circulation. Another added benefit of increased flexibility is that it can help prevent injuries to a certain extent. And many clubs offer flexibility classes, including yoga. Before discussing the benefits of including exercise from all three of these categories, it needs to be acknowledged that there are some of you out there who aren't doing any exercise. None. To you, I suggest picking any kind of exercise and just get moving. It might be yoga, walking, or weightlifting. Doesn't matter, just get started and keep it up. Combining the three categories of exercise contributes to total body fitness. If you only do bench presses and barbell curls, your heart muscle is not going to be conditioned as well as a person's heart who runs every day on the treadmill. Likewise, someone who only runs for exercise probably won't have the flexibility of the devoted yoga student. Of course, that yoga student most likely can't bench press 300 pounds either. So do you see the cycle here? As I stated earlier, everyone has their favorite type of exercise. If you enjoy it, by all means, continue it. Use it as your primary exercise. For example, if you are the ex-football player and you really like pumping iron, push it hard. You have to squeeze in some time, though, on the treadmill or go for a walk a few times a week. Spend 5 or 10 minutes to stretch twice a week after you hit the weights. This plan utilizes resistance training for the primary exercise, and The other two exercise categories are used as cross-training. A similar plan could be made by using yoga as a primary, with cardio and resistance training as secondary. With any fitness routine, finding time to exercise is a challenge for many of us. It really doesn't matter when you work out. Just fit it in when it's most convenient for your schedule. I break up my routine. I do cardio at home in the morning and or at night, and my weightlifting is done in the morning or sometimes during my lunch hour. Stretching is done, well, you know, when I feel like it, and that's usually at night when I'm winding down. Well, no one's perfect, I admit it. I should follow my own advice and probably stretch a little bit more, but I do try to do it on occasion. So we all have our weaknesses. So if you're only doing one category of exercise in your plan, I suggest incorporating the other two into it. Try it. You might even like the variety and the challenge. Now, if you excuse me, I think I'll go do some stretching because it's good for me. Well, let's talk some bodybuilding. The Mr. Olympia is just a little more than a month away. So I'm going to give you my Mr. Olympia preview. And there's two big questions that are being asked about the 2008 Mr. Olympia. One is, can Jay win his third Mr. Olympia title by defeating Dexter Jackson? And the other question on the minds of the fans is, who will place higher, Phil Heath or Dennis Wolf? Now, last year, Jay Cutler edged out Victor Martinez in a somewhat controversial decision. Many thought Cutler was off in his conditioning during the prejudging, and Victor would triumph and become the new Mr. Olympia. Jay, however, managed to transform his body just enough for the finals, and Victor faded slightly. This enabled Jay to regain the title, and this year Martinez is sidelined with an injury, and that allows a few guys to start thinking about moving up a place or two in the final standings. And speaking of guys moving up a place, here's another opportunity. Kai Greene has opted not to compete in the Mr. Olympia this year. He's using a strategy much like Phil Heath has done for the last 2 years. Greene wants to rest, grow, and make a huge impact when he finally does step on the Olympia stage. Branch is out of the big show, too. Branch Warren injured his tricep when he slipped walking down the stairs at his house. Now, that injury required surgery to repair it. But he's confident, however, that he will be back in time for the 2009 Arnold Classic. So who is in this show? Well, we've got about 17 guys that are competing. There might be another couple guys qualifying still at the Atlantic City Pro Show. But without further ado, here's who I think is going to make the top 15 of the Mr. Olympia. 15, Fouad Abiad. He's that Canadian guy in the Muscle Tech ads. He qualified at the Europa and was still up in the air whether or not he's going to do the show when I was recording this. I'm pretty sure that he's going to. He's looking at it with an attitude that if it wasn't a fluke that he qualified, he'd be able to qualify again. So if he doesn't compete, it's not a big deal. If he does compete, I see him in the top 15. 14th place, Leo Ingram. He'll be making his first Mr. Olympia appearance. He's got great size, and his conditioning has been pretty good, but not fantastic, you know, compared to the other Olympians anyway. 13th place, I see Craig Richardson. He's got a very pleasing physique. He's complete, but he's not big enough to place higher in a show like the Olympia. Craig has a look like a late 80s or early 90s bodybuilder, which everyone seems to be saying is really great, but that style of physique is not being rewarded these days. 12th place, Ronnie Rockel, or Raquel. I've heard it pronounced both ways now. He's got a great physique, horrible presentation. I don't think there's a guy with better proportions in the IFBB. He's got everything, but he looks like it's his first competition every time he stands on stage. Better stage presence and posing ability could bump this guy up more than a few places. And I hope he proves me wrong and dazzles everyone this year because I find out that he's worked extra hard on his presentation to be great. And it'd also be more money in his pocket, too, if he invests the time to improve his posing ability. 11th place, I see Johnny Jackson.
Now, there's not a pro with bigger traps than Mr. Jackson. Nope. He's huge and powerful looking, which makes him look like a modern-day Franco Colombo. But like Franco, Jackson needs to bring up his thighs a bit and a little bit tighter at every show for him to place higher at the big show. Even though he's won a couple of shows, he's inconsistent with his conditioning, and that seems to hold him back. 10th place, David Henry. I see him making the top 10 this year. David Henry's back on track, and he's had great success in the under 202-pound class this year. He's most likely going to take that, I think, with the 202 Olympia Showdown. And when he turned around at the Tampa show, he rivaled Ronnie Coleman. Not only does he have back thickness, width, and conditioning, but he has a lot of separation to boot, as evidenced by all the lumps and the crevices that you can see all over his back. Now, keeping his weight down for the new class has brought out a new level of conditioning for Henry. Now, despite his short stature, there's a very good chance he'll make the top 10 this year at the Mr. Olympia. 9th place, Dennis James. He has trimmed down. He has his waist in control and does not have the overfilled appearance. Now, James has struggled with a protruding tummy in years past, but he contrived a formula that allowed him to nearly grab a victory away from Tony Freeman twice. With one of the best, most musculars in the sport, James is sure to finish in the top 10. Whether or not he can regain a top 6 placing with his new look is still to be seen. Coming in at 8, Gustavo Bedell. He's one of the guys you just can't rule out. He might come in fantastic shape and make a run for the entire show, which he did in 2004 and 2005, or he might place in the number 8 spot and complain that he got overlooked, like he did last year. Now, whatever the case might be this year, Bedell is a shoe-in for a top 10 spot and might be in the top 6 if he nails his conditioning and he keeps his legs full. All right, so who do I see in 7th place? Silvio Samuel. Now, he's been climbing the ladder and moving ahead of many guys who have been in the pro ranks longer than he has. Samuel's conditioning is almost always second to none, and he has great muscle separation. He still needs to bring up his delts, and he needs more lat width, especially in the front double biceps pose. Taking time off, however, and doing some off-season growing is the only way for him to make those improvements, but he seems to want to be in almost every show still. But once he brings up those areas, I see him being in the top 5. In 6th place, Melvin Anthony. He seems to be able to bring his condition package to the Olympia each year, but somehow manages to come in smooth at other shows. He came in pretty smooth at the Arnold this year, and last year's Atlantic City Pro Show. He took only, I think it was 4th place, and everyone was thinking he was washed up at the time, but came back at the Olympia to do very well. Now, Melvin has a very balanced and proportional physique, and if Melvin's on, he's a top 6 finisher. If he's not at his best ever conditioning for this show, he could easily slip to a 9th or even 10th place. Tony Freeman, the X-Man. He's come off 2 strong showings at the Tampa and Europa contest. After a dismal showing at the 2007 Mr. Olympia, where he clearly messed up, and a disappointing finish at this year's Ironman and Arnold Classic, Freeman has redeemed himself. After the Ironman, I thought we had seen the best of Freeman, but he has found his winning formula again and is hoping to crack the top 6 at this year's Mr. Olympia. If he can hold on to his conditioning for the Atlantic City show and the Olympia, he will be in the running for a top 6 or top 5 finish this year. Okay, number 4, Dennis Wolfe. When Dennis Wolfe walked out on stage last year, he was the first competitor. It was obvious that he was there to do some real damage. He had done his homework, and his coach, Milo Sarchev, had timed his peak perfectly. When Wolfe hit his first most muscular shot, no one would be able to beat him in that pose the rest of the night. Wolfe gained a lot of fans after the 2007 Mr. Olympia. With his superhero proportions, wide shoulders, tiny waist, many fans felt he actually should have won the competition. He made quite an impression on everyone, except Cutler. Now, the current Mr. Olympia summed him up as overrated with structural flaws. Granted, Wolf did need some work on the hamstrings and his calves were much too small. His lower back didn't have the thickness or development of Cutler or Ronnie Coleman either. That being said, however, he did have a much more dramatic and flaring physique, and the other's competitors, you know, they lacked his wow factor, including Cutler. But even though he's working with Chad Nichols this year, I doubt Wolf can bring up his weak areas enough in only 1 year to place much higher than fourth. Phil Heath will be in third place, the gift. He will finally take the Olympia stage after foregoing the competition, even after qualifying for it during two consecutive years. Seeing how he compares to the other competitors at the Orleans Arena is one of the most anticipated events of the 2008 Mr. Olympia. Personally, Phil Heath versus Dennis Wolf is the matchup I'm looking forward to most. With more muscle packed onto his 5'9 frame, the gift looked incredible at his Ironman win earlier this year. Bedell gave him a little competition, but Heath won it fairly easily. A couple weeks after the Ironman, Heath made a run for the Arnold Classic title where he placed second to an improved Dexter Jackson. After those two shows this spring, Phil took some time off in order to grow a little more and prepare for his debut at the Mr. Olympia. With the exception of his much-talked-about narrow shoulders, Phil has a very complete physique and has shown that he has an incredible ability to achieve great conditioning. Because of those two factors, I see him placing above Dennis Wolf, but I don't think he's ready to defeat Dexter Jackson. Now, Dexter's gone on record stating that he thinks this year is his year to win the Olympia. I see him in second place. Now, he's never had a better chance to win. Since this year's Arnold Classic win, where he sported an extra few pounds of muscle, Dexter believes he might have a chance to knock Jay off the throne. It's now or never. All right, winning the 2008 Mr. Olympia, I see it being Jay Cutler. When fans started questioning Ronnie Coleman's placings in 2001, 2002, everyone remembers the outcome of 2003. Coleman redeemed himself with an incredible showing that year and closed all the mouths of the naysayers. Cutler is feeling something like Coleman in 2003. Last year, Cutler won by a very narrow margin. He was off because he messed up his preparation. Fans said even Wolf had him beat. I don't know about that, but fans did say it. They said he was scared and that he ran away from Wolf during the pose down and so on. Well, folks, things like that make champions train harder. It drives them and spurs them on. Now, even though Dexter thinks he might have a chance of dethroning Jay this year, his chances are very slim. Photos of Jay from a few weeks ago show he's on target, he's big, and he's ripped. Sandow Trophy number 3 looks like it will be placed in Jay's living room in the vacant spot that he has reserved for it. Well, bodybuilding fans, that's it for this episode. Thanks for joining me. Until next time, train hard.